Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
You might end up on. I'm your host, Alexis Linkletter. I'm sitting across from Jack and next to Billy, and I am hijacking the intro because I'm going to reset and remind you where we left off in part one of the Travis Forbes story. This is part two. So if you haven't listened to part one, stop right away, stop where you are, go back and listen to it before you get into this episode. So where we left off in part one of the Travis Forbes story was Travis was on police radar, but still sort of out and about. The cops didn't have anything on him. Then we spoke to Audrey, and she said that she kind of lost track of Travis. She saw him in the media for a while when he was on the radar for Kenya's disappearance. But then when the police didn't have any evidence, she kind of, you know, lost track of where he was. She was in Fort Collins. He was in Denver. But then she said she heard his name again on the news when he was implicated in the assault and attack of a woman named Lydia. And if you don't remember the episode in part one, listen to Jack's response to hearing of this.
In July, when he attempted to kill Lydia, comes back into the spotlight.
Wait, who the f*** is Lydia?
Who the f*** is Lydia? We're going to tell you right now. The Fort Collins Police and Fire Rescue were essentially alerted to a raging fire at an apartment complex in a Fort Collins suburbs. We have a portion of the 911 call, but we're going to learn who Lydia is very soon. So stand by, listen to this call.
We kicked the door in and we're screaming for somebody. The upstairs is, we're just calling for somebody to see if there's somebody in the apartment.
So police receive this frantic 911 call, which brings them to an apartment complex in the suburbs of Fort Collins. And what they arrive to is a truly horrific scene. The apartment itself is engulfed in flames. And when they walk up to the front of the building, there seems to be a lifeless woman lying on the front lawn. Immediately, they deduce that she likely hurled herself out of a top floor window to escape from the scorching fire. And the woman was bloodied and she was covered in bleach and she smelled like bleach. I mean, it was completely drenched in bleach. She was rushed to the hospital immediately.
I think because it, you know, with Lydia, the most upsetting was it hit so close to home. Not only was it in the town that I was living in, so, you know, of course we see, you know, news and all, you know, everybody's there, trying to figure out what had happened and who did it. To hear Lydia's story about how she, you know, was basically left for dead. He beat her so badly and lit her apartment on fire and then leaves. And the fact that she was able to come to long enough to jump out of her second story apartment and then, you know, she's rescued. It's creepy, but also at the same time, she's amazing because she was given enough will and power to get out of this horrible situation. But the fact that he beat her so badly, I know that the hospital reports were saying that her injuries were so extensive, you know, it was almost like she had been in a car accident without a seatbelt on. Like, that just hits my heart. You know, it's like, that's just so powerful and that he is capable of doing this. I mean, it takes it to a whole different level.
It was the 5th of July, and one of the last things that Lydia remembered were the fireworks. She had left her friends in at Fort Collins Park after watching the 4th of July fireworks, and she was found the next morning unconscious in her yard, her apartment on fire. She had been beaten mercilessly and sexually assaulted, and then her attacker had also set her apartment on fire. But somehow, she regained consciousness from the beating and managed to jump out of the second-story window to save herself, which is pretty incredible, because it's obvious that
it's giving me the chills.
If she had bleach on her, this guy thought
she was dead.
She was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So he sexually assaulted her. He beat her. He thought he killed her. He poured some bleach on her to get rid of what he felt he had left on her. And she was able to...
And lit her house on fire.
And lit her... Yes.
Smoke inhalation.
Smoke inhalation, everything. Yes. She's able to get up and then jump out the window. Jump out a second-story window, which is no mean feat. I mean, she's gonna land on the ground.
You can die from that.
Yeah. Or break a leg or something. I mean, this is an incredible, heroic story. And we see, you know, I always wish that in true crime storytelling, we hear more about the heroic stories, because this woman, as we'll see, this woman clearly, what she did and her actions stopped a guy from killing again.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, I get the chills just hearing about her, because I can't imagine just the horror of having experienced what she experienced. And I also read that her jaw was broken, that she, you know, had her like chest stomped on. Just incredible, incredible beating.
Oh my God. Okay. I am so excited about this sponsor, because I just got my shoes in the mail and I have never seen a more beautiful pair of boots in my entire life. M. Jemmy is my new favorite shoe brand. They are incredible. They have unparalleled quality, incredible style, and they're shoes that you don't see just every day. So they're made in the same family-owned workshops in Italy where items from one of the most well-known luxury brands are made, and they are handcrafted and so beautiful. But because of their direct relationship with the workshops, you get the same quality shoes as all these luxury brands for a third of the price. I just bought the most amazing knee-high heeled brown leather boots, and they're going to be so cute with a little mini skirt and a little sweater for fall. I'm so excited to wear them. So if you guys want to try out M. Jemmy shoes, go to mjemmy.com. That's mjemmy.com/firstdegree, and you can get $50 off your first pair of shoes. They're so incredible and they sell out of styles super fast. So go check out what they have now. That's mjemmy.com/firstdegree for $50 off your first pair.
So who is Lydia? I mean, her name is Lydia Tillman. And who is this woman who was able to kind of survive the impossible? Basically, which is even more amazing, when the paramedics arrived on the scene, she was kind of in and out of consciousness. And they did ask her whether or not she knew who had done this to her. She was able to muster like a no, 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 is what she said. Then she literally right after suffered a stroke. And when she got to the hospital, they had to put her in a medically induced coma for more than 5 weeks. And what we did learn about Lydia, at least at this time in her life, she was an acclaimed sommelier and a seasoned world traveler, which is goals.
I know, dude. That's all I want in life.
Seriously.
As I drink my probably $15 bottle of rosé.
It was $6.
Oh, no. I'm going to have a hangover tomorrow.
So this whole situation initially left the Fort Collins police completely stumped. Lydia Tillman had only moved to Fort Collins about 4 months ago, and she only had a handful of friends in the area. So I feel like trying to figure out a suspect that was connected to her was probably pretty difficult.
Right, and very few. I mean, if you've only been there a few months, there's a few people she knows. She
probably doesn't have any enemies.
No boyfriend, exactly. Yeah. No family in the area. Like, who could it be?
Right. So for the first 48 hours after the attack, it was truly a case of whodunit. But within a few days, they were contracted by the Denver police after hearing about Lydia's attack. Detectives at both of the departments recognized similarities in the attack of Tillman and the Kenya disappearance. And those were fire and bleach.
Exactly. And to remind you guys what those similarities are, in the Kenya investigation, Travis Forbes's van had been cleaned with bleach, and a witness had also seen him burning something the next day. It's suspected to be evidence, whatever he was burning. Then Lydia's attacker started a fire in her bedroom and then used bleach to wash evidence off of her. However, luckily, in Lydia's attack, the assailant didn't do a thorough cleaning job, because when Lydia Tillman survived, so did her attacker's DNA. They rushed to have Travis's DNA compared against the DNA found on Lydia. But in the meantime, I mean, because we've talked about this in other episodes. It's not like on TV. DNA doesn't happen. DNA results don't come in 30 minutes like it seems to do, like on CSI. It can be expedited, but it takes weeks.
Yeah.
Or months. And so in the meantime, while they were waiting, they were obviously putting this top priority. They were going to do this as soon as possible, but they were not going to let Travis out of their sight because to the shock of all, they still had nothing on him. So he was free. He could do whatever he wanted. The sociopath is jaunting around like a carefree.
With some matches and a bottle of bleach.
Skipping his step, meeting women, giving them fake names, making granola bars.
And the Fort Collins police, they're all over him. And they're following him day and night. They track him to all these bars in Old Town Fort Collins where he stashes his bicycle in the backpack. And as the bars close, he walks to a hot dog stand. And then he starts juggling glowing balls.
Sounds like someone Jack would date.
He's probably a burner, too.
Now, it's obvious that... So when the... I mean, let's talk about this for a second. When the bars are closing, he is juggling glowing balls. This is... It's not a joke, though, because what he's doing is he's trying to attract...
Attention
for the drunk girls that are coming out of these bars and the drunk women that are coming out of these
peacocking.
Bars.
Yeah,
he was peacocking, as they call it.
In the worst way. Who wants a juggler? Or a juggalo?
But they're glowing balls, though.
I mean, either of those.
So...
I want a jug of wine. That's the only jug I want.
Same.
And the idea that somebody is trolling around as all of these women get out of these bars at 2 a.m. and are walking around aimlessly and looking for the one woman that is walking, trying to walk home and is a little bit tipsy. We've seen this before. We saw this with Jesse Matthew in Charlottesville. And you see the video of Hannah Graham, who had gone out to a bar and she drinks a little bit too much. And she's walking around Charlottesville, which is this beautiful, you know, little downtown college campus or college, you know, town right outside of the campus. And this guy is just this is sharks seeing blood in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just waiting for these girls to come out and waiting for these women to come out. They've had too much to drink, and then they're going to pounce on them. And this is what this guy was doing.
Right.
And he just had a different tact. He was just like, you know, Jesse Matthew saw a woman who was sort of stumbling and said, hey, I can give you a ride. He was a taxi driver and then took her and then unfortunately eventually killed her. This guy decided to peacock with these balls and glowing balls, and he decided to juggle these balls.
Juggle the balls. Stay away from the juggling balls.
So several women wandered out of the bars and they started talking to this guy. Hey, there's, you know, had a little bit to drink.
Listen, if I was drunk and I saw a bunch of glowing balls being juggled around, I'd probably talk to him too.
100%. And he's handsome. I'd be like, if this isn't your job, then I'm really into it. If you're doing it for money, yes. Hard no.
This is just...
But it wasn't his job. He made those hella good gluten-free granola bars.
Oh, God.
So one woman chatted with Travis for about 30 minutes before she started walking alone with him toward a dark neighborhood.
Dun, dun, dun. So the officers have been watching him, so they start tailing him. And they followed the two for a few blocks before separating them, and they stopped Travis for questioning. He told the officers that his name was Travis Kennedy, which is a lie, and they let him go and continued to follow him to see what he would do.
They continue to secretly watch him. And at this point, Travis returned to his bike that he had stashed earlier, as Billy mentioned. He changed his shirt. He changed his hat, which is so sketchy to just change your outfit out
after
of nowhere.
After police just question you?
Well, he knows he's being followed. He's just...
After the bars are closed?
He's so arrogant. You know? He's such a arrogant...
Such a prick.
Well, he's gotten away with so much so far. And police were watching him this entire time as he's changing his wardrobe from a secret stash of clothes in his backpack in the bushes. And then he started to follow... pretty boldly, a very visibly drunk woman as she stumbled into a dark neighborhood alone. And the police are watching this, and they're so tempted to keep watching him to see what he's going to do because they're dying for something to arrest him on. But they're too worried about this woman's safety. So police arrest Travis. And the one excuse for arresting him they could come up with was that he lied about his name. So
can you arrest somebody for lying?
Yes.
You can?
Yep. 100, well, to a cop? Yeah. Mm. They didn't tell him, though, that they were following him or watching him or that he was a suspect in Lydia Tillman's attempted murder or Kenya's disappearance. They just played it off like, we know that's not your name. You gave us a fake name. They checked his ID. It was fake. Mm-hmm. Didn't match up with what he said. They arrested him. But he's back in custody. But that's not a huge... You could bail out of that pretty quick. Right, Billy?
So the clock is ticking. And this is something that you can get bailed out for pretty quickly. And the cops believe more than ever that Travis is not only dangerous, but that he's also on the verge of committing another crime, which is why he was luring these drunk women to walk away with him. So Travis is waiting to be bailed out of jail. And the lab technicians with the Colorado Bureau of Investigations are working through the night to try to compare the DNA that they found on Tillman to the DNA sample collected from him in Austin. And at 10:45 p.m. on July 11th, Travis is moving towards the front of the line in jail, and he's minutes away from posting bond and breaking out of jail. And at that very moment, the Colorado Bureau of Investigations confirms that there's a DNA match, and Travis is rebooked on suspicion of attempted murder and arson.
I think that's when it really hit me. The case dragged on for a little bit, as they were investigating and they were, connecting these two crimes, these two horrendous things that he did. I was, definitely glued to the internet and the TV and just wanting things to be settled. I wanted it to be figured out. I guess I didn't want him to be that person in my mind because I had this such a close connection with him, but I knew that it was him.
Travis is now in custody, finally on something they can hold him on. And he kind of knows he's going down. So by this point, the investigators had come to know Travis Forbes as a very well-read and charming liar. He was very believable throughout the duration of this investigation. And while in custody, they pressed him about Kenya. They had him on Lydia. They had him with DNA. But they pressed him on Kenya because they still had nothing. And they urged him to tell them where she was. And at one point, he even prodded the detectives for why they hadn't charged him with Kenya's murder yet. Travis then leaned back and smugly said, "You guys were so close."
Ugh.
So if you're a podcast listener, you're probably on the go. You might be running around chasing your kids. You might be having a long commute. You might be working. But that's the thing about podcasts is we're always listening while we're doing something else. So I'm sure the last thing that you want to have to worry about is figuring out when you have to dye your hair. Look no more, because we've got Madison Reed. For decades, women have only had two options when it came to coloring your hair. You're either using this outdated at-home hair dye that obviously is not that good, or you're going to the salon and it's taking you all day. So Madison Reed is reinventing hair color with the quality of salon color, the convenience and affordability of at-home hair color, and an ammonia-free formula made with ingredients that you can feel good about. So if you want to join hundreds of thousands of busy women who've tried and loved Madison Reed, go to madison-reed.com and use our code FIRSTDEGREE for 10% off plus free shipping on your first order. That's madison-reed.com with code FIRSTDEGREE.
This is a lot of sessions and a lot of hours of interrogation. And eventually Travis's tone shifts and he smiles and he puts his hands behind his head and he looks at the detective in the eye and he says, "You know what? I'll tell you everything. But I want a deal." Thinking like, what kind of deal would this guy want?
Mm.
And he says, "I don't want to be labeled as a sex offender."
So he doesn't mind being labeled as a murderer, but he doesn't want to be labeled as a sex offender.
Well, Audrey has a theory on why. And first, we're going to hear Travis say this himself. So let's start with that.
"I want to go to prison being labeled as a sex offender."
"Okay. What else?"
"That's it. That's it."
"You'll confess to everything." if you go to prison without being labeled a sex offender. Is that what you're saying? Is that you're mad enough?
Yes. 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 That's what I'm saying.
Travis just said a lot of shit, and I know the quality isn't great, and we're sorry. Police interrogation usually isn't, but he essentially said he's afraid to be raped in prison. He said that he's kind of hinted and thrown a breadcrumb to the fact that there's probably other victims, and also that when this information about these other victims come to light, it'll be horrific. It'll be horrible. And it's, again, the detective who we listened to said, all right, so you'll confess to everything if we give you this deal. And he said, yes, yes, I will.
So is him hinting to other victims, do we think that he actually has other victims, or he's doing that just to get the deal?
I'm sure it's just for a deal. I'm not sure. I mean, this guy's a sociopath, but he's not a smart criminal.
No.
It's weird. We're comparing him to Bundy because he is a good-looking guy and he is a sociopath.
I know a few of those. I've dated them.
Same.
But he is not as smart as Bundy.
No.
No, he did not have, I mean, in 2011.
Technology wasn't as good.
That's back true.
When Bundy. No, in 2011, he did not know how to get away with this stuff. I mean, it was clear.
But Bundy was operating in the 70s. They didn't even name, they couldn't test your blood type then.
This guy texted, this guy decided to cover his tracks by texting her.
It was smarter to do that. It made him seem like.
No.
Did you get, I
bet you that Ted Bundy would have been on Tinder if he was, like, 100%. If he was doing his shit today. He would have been leaving trails all over the place.
But, I mean, the fact that this guy probably, this guy found her on the street. So what are the odds of somebody seeing him and finding him and identifying him on the street versus
right? Well, yeah.
If
them
he had
knowing,
never texted her, do you think that they would have surveillance? Surveillance.
It doesn't matter
what was
though.
The surveillance of him though.
Who knows? He probably knows. He's probably like, shit, I drove by here. Shit, I drove by here. Shit, I drove by here.
But the connection of him to some random girl on the street,
it's
that would
so,
be a lot harder without that text message. It would have been a lot harder.
Sure, but in his head, he probably was like, if I seem like I care, it'll be less incriminating, because he probably was like, I drove by, he probably saw surveillance cameras.
Yeah,
he
but
probably,
so, but that's the thing, though, is that he was completely anonymous in this whole deal, and then he decides to inject himself into it just to give himself, I mean he injected an alibi before he was even known as a suspect. Well, that is what happened here.
Well, that's like a very, that's another sociopath earmark. That's another like psychopath earmark where it's like you want the recognition for what you did. Whether in this
moment.
Well,
no, he's getting his kicks out of being a part of it.
Oh, totally. And this could be one of those things too where it's like he doesn't even know that he wants the recognition. He just wants to be involved in the drama because it gets him off. Mm-hmm. And the idea of kind of meeting Kenya's dad at the gas station, shaking his hand, comforting him, assuring him. He loves like those chess matches.
Absolutely.
He loves this like cat and mouse with the cops. He loves it gets him off to see the dad all worked up and suspicious, but he can't prove it. I mean, he loves a thrill. He's a thrill seeker.
I mean, and he was an actor. He was acting all upset, like getting worked up when he was talking to the dad. Like he obviously is getting some sort of satisfaction out of being a player in the game.
Yeah, cheap thrills, man. So this deal. Travis did, in fact, get this deal because they were like, tell us what the f*** you know, because God knows. I mean, Kenya's family had no closure, and closure is a terrible word. Kenya's family had no idea what had happened to her, because I don't think people ever really get closure. It's just it's better to know than not know, and better to know what happened than hold out hope frivolously. This deal is now in place, and a contingency of this deal was that Travis Forbes would confess to everything, including the killing of Kenya Monhe.
So here's what he says. He says he picked up Kenya outside the nightclub, and she was really drunk. She passed out in his van. Remember that creepy white van?
Mm-hmm.
Then he starts
one
having...
One true thing he said was that he had a creepy white van,
yeah.
And he did.
God, what the hell?
So she passed out in his van. He starts having sex with her while she's unconscious. She wakes up. She resists. And he strangles her.
Then he ends up driving around with Kenya's body in his van for hours. He decided to put her in a cooler until he decided how to proceed.
He had to duct tape the cooler shut because she was already starting to go into rigor mortis and her arm kept like popping out. So he was trying to keep her.
So awful. So after this, I mean, he admitted to her killing. Now, the next matter was, where the F was she? He admitted to burying her in the countryside of Colorado.
I wanted to bury her either next to some water or next to some trees.
Why is that?
Because that's where I would like to be buried. If somebody had killed me, I would hope that they would bury me next to something nice. But just dump me in some dumpster.
So you find this spot. Why did you pick there?
Because of the trees.
Okay. And you, how long do you think you dug for?
It wasn't very long. I was actually surprised. I was worried that it was so late that I wouldn't have enough time.
Okay.
But I dug that hole fast.
Were you actually inside the hole?
Yeah.
And that's why you were able to tell me that it went shoulder down.
I left my credit card inside the hole.
Why'd you do that?
It was not that I wanted to get caught. It wasn't like I was trying to brag that I did it. Because I knew that if it was ever going to be found, holy shit, that body credit card. Those credit cards have embroidered lettering on them. I just figured it was right. I figured that if you found the body, that I should be caught.
That was chilling, and a lot of this became public after Travis's arrest. So let's hear what Audrey had to say about seeing this, seeing her, one of her close friends, saying these things on television.
Yeah, you know, once he was brought in and all of these interviews are going on that were all publicized, I definitely knew that it was a show. It was an act. Looking back on those now, it's definitely not the Travis that I knew, which is just crazy. But I know that that was just an act. I mean, he was trying to make it seem like he couldn't be capable of doing something so horrible. Doesn't know where it came from. And, he's sick and he's sad and he's saying all these things. And it's like, no, that's a ton of BS. Like you are fully capable of doing this to somebody. And I think it's so deep rooted that he doesn't even know. And so watching those videos, it's just like, no, this is just a show.
As we recall, Travis got this deal in exchange for giving all the information the police wanted. And a condition of Travis's deal was that he had to lead the police to where he buried Kenya. He took them in police vehicles to a really remote area. He was handcuffed. He was in his prison jumpsuit. And he led them to a place in the Colorado countryside. And he exited the vehicle. Once he was there, he indicated where they should pull over. He walked outside and he walked towards a patch of grass. And then he let out a blood-curdling scream. What a f***ing drama queen, by the way.
No, this is... That's weird. You know,
he's so theatrical. He's trying to be this.
Because he can't gain anything from it. I mean, we already know what he's getting. So
just for fun.
So here's my question with, like, because it's like in that one interview, he was talking about, you know, where he'd want to be buried if he was killed, whatever, and he seemed upset. Now, as like a sociopath that don't have like real actual feelings, do we think this is all for a show?
Yes, this is how just acting. People feel.
He's acting upset.
I've seen someone act upset like this
before. I feel like if somebody died, I should be sad.
And this is how someone would act if they were remorseful.
Right? Yeah.
This is a complete projection of how he perceives feelings to be.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we talk about murder and other crazy, strange things on this podcast, but something that's really scary that happens to way more people than you would think is cyber crime. In just a few seconds, anybody can become a victim. A hacker with all the right know-how can easily intercept your data, and they can figure out all of your online activity, steal your passwords, and compromise all of your personal information.
None of us want that. I want all my private stuff to myself. So with one of our amazing new sponsors, ExpressVPN, they can help you combat cyber crime. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. ExpressVPN secures and makes you anonymous to all people around you by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Using ExpressVPN, you can safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped or having any of your personal data stolen. So if you guys want to check out ExpressVPN, go to expressvpn.com/firstdegree and you can get 3 months free with a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/firstdegree.
At LA Care, we are committed now more than ever to helping Angelenos access affordable health care. We embrace the diversity, uniqueness, and culture that makes Los Angeles our home. LA Care is here for you, your family, and your loved ones, providing access to care through Medi-Cal, Medicare, and our covered California health plans. Our local family resource centers are here to help you elevate your well-being and transform your health. To learn more, visit lacare.org. LA Care, for all of LA.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
The hit podcast Zane's World found a new home on Podcast One.
La Gonzalina. Probably should have practiced that before the show.
World traveler, author, and alcohol aficionado Zane Lamprey is well-learned in the art of embracing a good time as he reviews the best attractions and destinations on the globe.
So we went to Black Market Liquor Bar.
Just tell us what you remember.
That's what I remember.
Check out Zane's World every Tuesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
So he lets out the scream, and as he's sobbing, wrists shackled, walking towards this, like, patch of earth, he walked near this tree, pointed down at the dirt, and said, this is the spot. And the digging started.
So they start digging and digging, and about 4 feet in, they find her. She's taped in a fetal position. And she's draped in a plastic tarp.
I think what I make of that person is he's a sociopath. He does not have regard for anybody else. Narcissistic, probably. I mean, he definitely showed some of those tendencies just in our friendship. I mean, it was, you know, although he didn't share much about him, it was always about him, you know, kind of a schmoozer sort of, had his way with people. But I think just having that disconnect of human emotions and feelings, he doesn't have those. He is definitely lacking the empathy, and I think he's just a 100% sociopath. As close as I was with him and as much time as I spent alone with him, I definitely questioned, why was it not me? And the consensus was, with everybody that I talked to, was that he committed these crimes on two women that he didn't know. And that gave me sort of a sense of peace of, you know, Travis wouldn't have done this to me. I don't think he would have done anything to hurt me because of that relationship. Series of events that happened over the years that I knew him, there were some red flags, you know, his aggressiveness and his uncontrollable behavior when he was drinking. But then you just sort of distance yourself and, you know, you can set up those boundaries and those healthy fences with him.
Okay, so I also asked Audrey what the most chilling thing was about knowing this person and being connected to this person. And what she had to say was pretty interesting.
The most upsetting part to me, when he was bringing the cooler into the freezer, that video surveillance at that kitchen that he was using, and how he kind of planned everything out, wheels in this cooler, and then he starts disconnecting all of the video cameras. It just really did not sit well with me. Yeah, you know, when he met Kenya's dad at the gas station, just, you know, still wanting to put on a show. But then in his confession and, at, you know, they're asking him, you know, where he buried her and all these things, and he left his credit card with her body, because he knew that if they found her, then he would have then been caught. And it's, you know, it's just like the lies after lies after lies. But then there's this confession, which is mind boggling because, you know, you've already, you know, come to this point and you're already, you know, in the spotlight. And the fact that he can just lie so boldly to people in their face and look them in the eye and not say anything is beyond me. I mean, there is a total disconnect with that.
Travis has confessed to this murder of Kenya and the attempted murder of Lydia, and confessed and led police to the location of Kenya's body. What about Kenya's family and how Lydia was handling all of this? I mean, last we heard, she had been put in a medically induced coma.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenya's family, Kenya's dad, was dumpster diving looking for her body. So where is everyone now?
So Kenya's family is obviously heartbroken beyond words when they learn what happened to her. But they were so relieved that they could at least put her to rest. Lydia came out of her coma and survived. And every doctor who worked on her said that she would not have survived that horrific beating, but she had a will to live and survive that none of them had ever seen. The detectives in this case consider Lydia a hero because if she hadn't survived, the DNA likely would not have survived the fire and Travis would still be out there killing women. And then they also wouldn't have connected him to Kenya.
So Travis pleads guilty to Kenya's murder. As part of his plea agreement to Kenya's case, he avoids the death penalty, and he's not convicted of any sex crimes. He's sentenced to life in prison. And the next day, he pled guilty to attempted first-degree murder in Fort Collins, and he's sentenced for that crime for 48 years in prison for the attack on Lydia. And he cries in both courtrooms.
Like the bitch that he is. It's got to be super strange for anyone like Audrey or anyone like Zach. I'll just throw it in there. For people who knew Travis, it has to be very weird looking back.
Yeah.
And kind of assessing this person they thought they knew and trying to assess what red flags they missed.
But not really that weird, though. Because
they all thought that he was creepy.
They all thought he was creepy.
Audrey didn't.
Yes, she did. She had some inklings that he was off. But that's the thing. It's like, I mean, we said this in the Johnny Lewis case where it was like, oh, he was weird, but he was an actor. You yes, know, we all know weird people.
Yeah, Kurt actually said, Kurt Sutter, the creator of Sons of Anarchy, said, like, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing is about what Audrey's story is he started to act weird and she had this feeling he wanted more. And I've had a bunch of people in my life that are men.
Like
that,
romantically more.
Yes. Yeah. Who wanted something more and I didn't. And then they act weird. And then they act in some way that's strange. And when you think you're rejecting someone, then you make excuses for their behavior because you feel bad. And you're like, listen, they have a crush on me. Of course they're a little weird. It's very strange for girls because we don't want to be over accusatory because we get criticize. It's just hard to assess if someone's being weird or if they have a crush on you or if they're just...
Well, yeah, and it's hard to disassociate, like, yeah, is it because they have a crush on you or is it because they're a strange person in general?
People thought he was weird, but no one thought he was dangerous until he was. And that's generally what happens. It's like, everyone's a little odd. People maybe think I'm odd.
Not like that, though.
Well, no.
Oh.
People for sure think Billy's not like that, though.
I know. I'm like, what kind of red flags do I see in Billy right now that I could be like, ah, makes sense.
You know what? They don't. Because I'm the people that I'm around.
How do you know?
Because I act differently around you guys, around most other people. No, I've been in situations where people have actually called HR based on how somebody else is acting. And there's a specific kind of actions that they do. There's a specific kind of like thing that they do. And the bottom line is that trust your instinct, because mm-hmm. your instinct knows. We are the product of however many years, 5,000, 6,000 years of evolution. We know when there's danger. And it's not only danger with, oh my God, there's somebody coming at me with a knife or a club or whatever. There's somebody coming at me with some sort of weird rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we can acknowledge and... It sounds weird, but tell HR.
I only think you see in retrospect. Because I have a couple of creepy things in retrospect. It's funny. There's a couple of people who've like weaseled their way into my life, and they're super fucking creeps. Like, I'm pretty sure they're trying to start cults. And only like a month after I stopped talking to them do I realize.
No, it's all in retrospect. It's all, like, most of it. But, like, I mean, to... What Audrey was saying about the one time that Travis tried to bring him into his house, or he tried to go mm-hmm, into her house mm-hmm. or whatever, and she made up the shitty excuse or whatever.
She had a boyfriend. She's like, I'm not going to your house, dude.
Right, but it's like she had that gut feeling that something was wrong.
Right.
But again, it's like in retrospect, she thinks about that now because something happened. I feel like if, you know, he didn't murder a girl, she would never be like, oh,
that was
so glad
weird.
I trusted my gut feeling on
exactly,
that one. So it's
exactly.
like, it's all kind of circumstantial in that aspect, because we've all kind of been in situations like that where something didn't feel right.
Absolutely. And Travis pleads guilty to both of these. He gets a life sentence plus 48 years. That's a long time in jail. Mm-hmm.
So after you spend all day and night listening to true crime podcasts, watching true crime shows, don't you want to feel ultra, ultra safe at home when you go to bed? Well, now with one of our sponsors, Blink Home Security, you can feel super safe in the comfort of your own home. Blink is an ultra affordable, 100% wire-free home security camera that runs on two AA batteries for up to 2 years. That is correct. Two AA batteries can last you almost 2 years. That's because Blink cameras don't have any wires, and they can be placed virtually anywhere around your home, inside or out. With Blink, you can make a one-time purchase and you can have access to a plethora of features. There are no subscriptions or fees to choose from. And don't worry, because it's super affordable, they start at just $99. So if you guys want to try out Blink, go to blinkforhome.com/firstdegree. That's blinkforhome.com/firstdegree to try yours.
But this is not where the story ends, because Audrey had a lot of questions for Travis, as one would if you had a friend who you perceived to be a close friend who ended up doing something batshit crazy. Let's hear what happened after Travis was sentenced in terms of the relationship between Audrey and Travis.
So once Travis was convicted and sent to prison, I found out what prison he was going to here in Colorado, and I felt like I wanted to write him a letter, only because I needed to share and I needed to be able to express how I felt and how I was mortified and how pissed off I was, and, you know, I just had a lot of stuff that I needed to get out of my head and share with him. So I wrote him, didn't think that he would write me back, but he did. It was, you know, 10, 12 page letter front and back. And the gist of the letter was a lot about how angry he was at himself. He has to put a towel over his mirror because he can't look at his face. He talked about what he was doing during the day, 24-hour, you know, or 23-hour, I should say, lockdown, doesn't get to talk to people, really see the light of day. And then there, in the middle of the letter, were these angry scribbles, almost like a child had taken a pen to the paper and just start scribbling, kind of, and almost poking holes through the paper. That was the point of the letter where he was angry at himself and sharing that with me. I held on to the letter for a couple months. And then I really needed to get rid of it, and so I burned it. I did ask him in the letter why. That was really the main reason why I wanted to write to him, but he never answered me. He was he admitted to doing what he had done, but he never once explained why. Was he being sincere? I initially want to say no, but there is a part of Travis that he was a good friend to me, and he was a close friend to me. And so does he feel bad? I'm sure there's a little bit of remorse, but if you can't look at yourself because of something that you did, then go ahead and do that, because you did a very, very awful thing.
We'll never really know whether or not Travis feels guilty or if this is a show. I mean, he's been portrayed as this sincere guy, this great guy, this good friend, this showman. So we don't really know if what he said in these letters to Audrey were sincere, and no one ever will. But he was ultimately convicted. He pled guilty. He was sentenced. But what is very interesting, and this person really sets an example to all persons, mm-hmm. is I heard that Lydia really took the high road at Travis's sentencing.
Right. So she actually decided to forgive Travis. She was unable to speak at his sentencing because she was still recovering from the stroke that he had caused. But she stood in front of him as her statement was read aloud. And in that statement, it said that my spirit and my soul in my mind remains untouched, and I wish you peace in this life.
That gives me the chills.
That gives me the chills, too. Like, I can't, I mean, none of us will know, or none of us know how we would respond in a situation like that, because none of us have been put into a situation like that. But, like, the willpower, and I don't know, it's just, it's
she couldn't speak because she had a stroke.
Yeah.
And she still was able to write this and wish this person well.
I mean, it's just to process all of that trauma and to still come out with it with a head like that it's very, I mean, commendable.
Right.
To say the least.
And to consider at this point, it was only a few months after her attack, but this man had already stolen a lot of her physical abilities. He had stolen at least 5 weeks when she was unconscious. Lord knows how long the PTSD will continue. I mean, this person really impacted her life in an indescribable way. So it's just, she is like the shining example of humanity. I don't mm-hmm. know. Forgiveness, compassion, because this guy is so f-ing pathetic. And she's like, I see that. Like, what a sad f-ing coward you
yeah,
are.
Yeah. I mean, and
so I take pity on you, sir.
I don't even know if it was like said in like a way like that, though.
No, but that's how she feels, where it's like you got to be a really miserable
to be hurting so much internally exactly. to be able to do that to mm-hmm. multiple people.
But she's double, you know, she's double because she survived, and she survived in such like a amazing way.
Yeah.
And then she forgave.
She's that awesome.
It's unbelievable.
Honestly, she's
a small yay in a world traveler.
Yeah. No,
she wins.
No, she's in the upper echelon of...
Mm-hmm. Of humanity.
Yeah.
Truly.
It's weird. You know, because she... Like the stuff that she was able to do, getting that, you know, whatever it was, that survival instinct to jump out of there...
No, she's a lot to offer the world, and she, I'm sure, on some level knew that and saved herself, which is incredible. And this is what happened at the trial. I mean, at the sentencing, which Jack mentioned, she offered forgiveness through someone who read her statement. But later, when she was able to communicate, she said to the media, "It was during the sentencing that I was able to forgive him. At first, I felt extreme anger towards him. Then I felt really sad for him. He must be in so much extreme pain to so brutally hurt another human." Which is, in so many words, what we all just anticipated. You know, of course, people only make other people miserable or in pain when they are suffering greatly.
My instinct about him continuing this behavior definitely would have gone on if he wasn't caught. I think that he got a thrill. And I think that he, when he did this with, you know, to Kenya, that he could probably get away with it again. It was pleasurable for him. And so the fact that, you know, 2-3 months later, he does almost the same thing to Lydia. If Lydia didn't survive, it would have been hard to catch him because, you know, she would have been burned in that apartment and his DNA wouldn't have been recognizable, I don't think. And so I think that he would have definitely gone on to do something else and become a serial killer. I think my warning to people would be, you just don't know what someone is really struggling with. We all have our bad days, but someone is capable of doing something that we just can't even wrap our heads around. Really, the only advice is to just don't give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm just always so curious about what it is that really got to him. You know, is it just sort of like been building up over, you know, number of years from his early childhood? What makes anybody do this? I mean, is it one specific event that someone just completely does a 180 and then starts going after people?
Okay, so I think what at least I have learned from this episode is something I guess I've been fearing my whole life, because I got into true crime because Ted Bundy terrified me. And they really are the most charismatic, mm-hmm. approachable, sexy people. I mean, a percentage of those people are psychopaths. So yeah. It's like you gotta always keep your guard up, trust your gut, don't let people in unless they earn it. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like this guy, guys, Google him, Travis Forbes, sexy man.
I think the scariest part of a case like this is it could happen to anybody. We've put ourselves in situations like where we've gone out drunk and we've separated from our friends countless times.
Million times.
You know, she wasn't doing anything wrong. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that is what's terrifying about it. She went home with this guy that looked like
a sweet,
it doesn't
wholesome.
Matter. And then that's the thing. It's like we judge people so much sometimes by the way that they look when it truly has nothing to do with their character whatsoever.
But some people are so good at the facade that, like, it wasn't just how he looked. It was what
how
he said.
Acting, yeah.
And, oh, this, I do, I'm on my way home from my granola bar route. I mean, that would trick me for
yeah.
sure.
I'd be like,
so
this-
it's like he's a master. I mean, he conned Kenya's dad. He shook. He drove out there with his 9mm and left after shaking his hand. Being yeah. like, that guy's all right.
No, he's convincing he's charming yeah. he's enigmatic. It's like it's scary. What, Billy?
Billy's laughing because he's like, I am this guy.
No, you guys are. I mean,
we're spot on, aren't we?
I think what you're talking about with this guy, and you have Ted Bundy. You have this guy. They're not the norm of murderers, you know?
They're usually drug dealers.
No, yeah, well you know, of the 6,000 murders that we had that are unsolved this year or last year, you know, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, you know. But, yes, be careful. Be careful of these guys. I don't know if you can spot it at all, but
I don't think you can.
I don't know. I think you're sometimes, and I used this phrase before, sometimes it's just a cosmic shuffling of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you do your best to be vigilant. You do your best to instill rules like go together, leave together. You do your best to stay sober and stay alert, but we're all a little bit vulnerable no matter what we do. Aren't we?
Aren't we all? This was quite a case.
And they all are. continue to be. Honestly, I mean, every case is like a very multifaceted personal journey into like walking in these people's shoes a little bit. It's right. fascinating.
Well, and here's the thing that I think that I'm enjoying about our podcast is we really are hearing these lesser known cases because we're getting them from our listeners.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, you know, there's all these, everybody's going to cover Ted Bundy. Everybody's going to cover John Wayne Gacy. Like, the, you know, these stories.
We don't need another podcast, even though it's unsolved, about Zodiac.
Yeah.
Or about JonBenet. We need... The...
Fingers crossed we get one about JonBenet.
I know. No, but here's the thing. If we
open that door, you knew
there,
that was there,
there's 5,000 unsolved
DTF
murders.
Down to find out who killed JonBenet.
Yes. No, there's 5,000 unsolved murders every year. Let's talk about those.
Okay, but while we're on the subject of all these high-profile cases, I do want to give our listeners a little teaser into what's to come a few weeks from now. We have some amazing interviews that we did with some survivors of the Jonestown Massacre. And we have Jim Jones's adopted son, Jim Jones Jr., and a People's Temple survivor named Jordan Vilches. And we interviewed them because a very important date's coming up. November 17th is the date where 40 years before that, the Jonestown Massacre occurred. And on November 17th, this Saturday, Sundance TV is releasing a series called Jonestown Terror in the Jungle. We were lucky enough to interview some of the amazing survivors who also participated in this documentary. So you guys have to check this out. And I mean, this massacre took the lives of more than 900 people. So while we do focus on these lesser known crimes, sometimes it is important and it is a good reminder to stay on top of these big monumental events in these big high profile crimes as a way to examine history and hopefully make sure it doesn't repeat itself. Again, this is just a reminder. You look out for the Travis Forbeses of the world. You look out for the Jim Joneses of the world. You look out for those wolves in sheep's clothing, that charisma, that sneaky, sneaky rhetoric, all that stuff is something to be on the lookout for.
So if you are looking to buy a car or if you have ever bought a car, new or used in the past, you know how confusing and overwhelming that the process can be. They have all these crazy jargon terms that nobody really understands, like invoice, list price, dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. And all you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. So TrueCar has this new thing called TruePrice. And now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. TrueCar dealers will show you the price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your own home. My favorite place to be. And how do you know that your TruePrice is great? Because TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the same car that you want. And your certified dealers know this so they can set their TruePrice competitively so they can win your business, which we love. So when you guys are ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. And some features are not available in all states.
Let me just round this out in that I know Travis teased the idea of there being other victims in his interrogation before he was given his deal. There has been no evidence that there are, but Denver / anywhere in Colorado, in the kind of southwest area, if anything matches bleach, fire, similar victim, truly, like, they haven't found anything, but it's possible. I mean, he was traveling to Austin. If you've heard of a case that could match this, let us know. Because right. He claimed to have other victims. They haven't found any. But this is relatively new, and there could be others that we don't know. So we always want there to be some takeaway, and that takeaway is that keep a f***ing ear out, because if he had other victims, we would like to figure that out.
Damn straight.
And on that note, if you guys are 1 degree away from a murder or other stranger than fiction crime, please write us at hello@thefirstdegreepodcast.com or on our website, thefirstdegreepodcast.com, or you can DM us on Instagram @thefirstdegree. Follow us, our personals on Instagram @AlexisLinkletter, @BillyJensen, @JackVanek. And I feel like our sign off for today is keep your friends close, but not that close.
Thank you for tuning in to The First Degree. Check out new episodes every Wednesday at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
Sources for this episode include direct quotes from Jordan Steffens, great feature in the Denver Post, Dateline, and the Huffington Post.
Sports action continues to heat up as we head into the best time of the year. NFL, college football, UFC, Major League Baseball getting closer to the playoffs, and the NBA season will be here just soon enough. There's one place only that we trust, and that's betonline.ag, the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. Visit betonline.ag today, sign up for a free account, and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code PODCASTONE. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. There's action for all types of sports fans. NFL and college football is back. You don't want to miss out on all the fun. BetOnline.ag. That's BetOnline.ag. Your online sportsbook experts.